Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 797. We're talking relief pitchers, a yearly tradition on this show, but a couple new faces this go around. I think relief pitchers keeps getting mixed up on my show like it does in baseball, it feels like right now. But I got two of them on tonight. We're going to go team by team to help you with your fantasy baseball needs. If it's a redraft league, if it's a draft and hold 50-round draft, you name it, we'll have you covered here the best that we can. And we're bringing on two guys that graced us with their presence at First Pitch Arizona on a panel to get things rocking and rolling for us. So they know a little bit about this. That's why they're on the show here. We'll kick it off with the first timer on the show. Pumped to get him on here. You can find him over at Pitcher List on a podcast of the Pitcher List Podcast Network in the Pen Pod. I believe that's with our good buddy Jake Crumpler, if I remember correctly. You can find him on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Rick Graham, how we doing, man?
Good. I'm glad to be on here. First time. Love the show though. Love being on here to talk relievers with you and Mike as well. Yeah.
Yes, and as Rick just mentioned, this is a almost at this point a frequent member of the show. We get him every year for the White Sox show, which is always must listen to. We might get a cameo from the world's best late inning reliever in the. The Chicago outside Chicago areas at some point on this show. He does written work at Rotoballer, at Fantrax. He's a part of the Fantasy Baseball Beat. Friend of ours, friend of yours, Mike Carter. How we doing, man?
Bubba, I'm great, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. Just getting my dose of Mike Carter outside of FPAS. So this is great.
I'm best in small doses. Most people would agree on this. So
you and me both, brother. I appreciate both of you guys joining me tonight. I'm really looking forward to this. Like I said at the beginning, these two guys, they cover the relief pitching world a lot, like very deep. Like they've been doing it. It's like Rick's go-to. Basically, and Mike as well. Mike's kind of expanded a little bit the last couple of years on some things, but like they both are focused on relievers, and they did host a panel at FPAS like to kick things off on Thursday. I apologize, I got done with golf. I walked in for the second half. Still very great stuff, but it was tough there. So without further ado, let's just get to it because this is going to be a potentially lengthy one because we're going over all 30 teams, folks. And we'll start with Rick here. We'll start with the American League. It's alphabetical order for those keeping track at home. We'll start with the Sacramento Athletics. And I just put little notes down. It means nothing. But in really, who's the option? Because when we're talking the A's, obviously, there's no Mason Miller coming back anytime soon. It was a smorgasbord of options to finish the season. And honestly, it looks that way now. So, Rick, if you're looking at the A's pen and you, I guess, had to do something, where would you point your direction?
Yeah, I know. I think someone mentioned today that Mark Leiter Jr. might be signing there. He might be one of their better options at this point. But I feel like, you know, for the guys that are in that bullpen as of now, I like Justin Sterner the best, who he didn't really have any save chances last year. I know down the stretch they kind of, you know, mixed and matched Hogan Harris and was it Michael Kelly? But Sterner really had a good second half. I know he was someone that was kind of hyped up a little bit earlier in the season. But over the second half, you know, he had a really good 2.73 Sierra, 16.3% swinging strike rate. You know, not a huge fastball, not like your typical closer fastball, but it's got good shape. He locates it well at the top of the zone. So like he intrigues me the most there, but you have like Elvis Alvarado and, Eduardo Nunez who came over in that Mason Miller deal. Those guys have huge, like big stuff, big time stuff as well. If they can throw strikes more consistently, they could easily be, you know, high leverage closer types. But you know, I think they'll keep Hogan Harris in that in like a lefty high leverage role. And, you know, right now I like Sterner the best. I don't think it's someone I'm drafting outside a really deep, you know, after pick 500 range. I'm imagining they'll bring in some sort of veteran there, but I don't know. There's still a lot of free agents out there at this point.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the full cheapy stacks yet. So we have a couple legit, quote-unquote, closers still before we get to the A's options.
Yeah.
Mike, what else do you have here? Because – yeah, Justin Sterner, so there you go, a name I didn't even pay attention to yet, so that's good that I was ADP 620 over the last month of Draft Champions drafts. Where are you at on the A's, Mike, because it's a mess.
Yeah, it is a bit of a mess, but I think Rick hit it right on the head. I mean, Harris is probably better used as a situational lefty. And I do think that Nunez is a really interesting flyer for those of you that are in the 50-team leagues and looking for somebody that might get some save chances. He's got a really live fastball. You don't want to look at any of the stats from last year. It's pretty ugly, but definitely a guy to kind of earmark and look at for later. I think it would be, probably Sterner to start the year would be my guess too, if they don't make any other moves. But, you know, you could definitely see the A's at the last minute shuffling in here and, you know, getting a guy like Kenley Jansen or Jordan Romano or somebody like that they can then flip at the deadline on a cheap deal. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out here in winter.
Most definitely. Let's head to Baltimore, who they made a big Pete Alonso signing on Wednesday. They made a Taylor Ward trade this year, and they also signed Ryan Helsley. So they are not being shy at this point in time. So if you're Alex Fast or someone else, you got to be pretty happy right now. Mike, we'll start you off here. Is it just Ryan Helsley's world and we're living in it, or are you concerned with what we saw when he was the setup man in New York last year?
I'm not that concerned about it. You know, there was a lot of talk about the pitch tipping and that he was going to make some corrections to that over the winter, and I have no doubt that he will. The stuff is still there. If the stuff wasn't there, I'd be a little bit more concerned about it. But I do think that Baltimore really here is doing their own version of going all in. I think Helsley would be the guy. They did trade for Andrew Kittredge there, and a lot of people, I think, for a few weeks thought, well, maybe Kittredge will step in until Bautista is ready. But there have been some interesting comments that have come out of Baltimore camp that they were not super thrilled with Bautista. And so I don't know if that means that when he comes back, where he will slot into this thing. I think Helsley is the guy set up by Kittredge. And I liked Keegan Aiken last year, too. He did a nice job, even though he was miscast as a closer, I think. But they've got a couple of good setup options there. You know, the Bumpieni or Cano back down into a middle relief role. But I like that idea of what they have at the back end. They might struggle a little bit. I'd be curious to hear what Rick has to say about that. They might struggle a little bit in getting to those guys. If they're looking at, Colin Selby and Cade Stroud and these guys as their middle relief guys, it could be a bit of an issue. But there's still a lot of time in the offseason to address that. But, yeah, I think it's Helsley, long story short.
Yeah. What about you, Rick? You on the same page here?
Yeah. Pretty much the same things Mike said. I do think there is some unknowns in that bullpen. Like you said, Colin Selby, I'm not too sure on, and Stroud doesn't have much of a track record. But I feel, I think Yennier Cano, who really struggled last year, I think will do better now, moving back into a more of a natural middle relief or even setup role. I'm pretty confident in Helsley bouncing back. I feel, like you said, the pitch tipping thing is obviously that needs to get figured out. He could do a better job locating his fastball up in the zone more and getting ahead of hitters. He's really, his fastball location was really bad last year as far as, closers go. His slider put away rate went down last year, like 10%. I think that comes back as long as he's able to locate his fastball again. But the stuff is still there. He's not there's no injury risk from last year or anything. I think, the Orioles pitching staff will be able to get the most out of him. But Kittredge is a nice fallback option too. I mean, he pitched really well, especially down the stretch for the Cubs last year. He really had a sneaky good year. I thought they would have been okay with him as their closer. But yeah, like you said, the Orioles seem to be pushing the chips in for this year, going out and getting Alonso, apparently in the mix for a big starting pitcher in free agency as well. So I think they're Helsley's, this is going to be Helsley's job to lose. And I think he's got an opt out there too. So if he does pitch really well this year, he probably opts out and gets a bigger deal next year.
All right. He looks interesting there. And I agree on the Kittredge point. Like, I was pretty excited to give him a shot, but go for it. Go get a Framber or something and see what Baltimore could do. Heading to Boston, Aroldis Chapman, one of the top, if not the top closer in baseball last season, gets older and all of a sudden he found it again, which was impressive. He's been okay in the setup role, but he wasn't as dominant as he was for a stretch there. He was dominant last season. So, Rick, are we just all in on Aroldis, or is there any, I guess, concern that the age and the seasons we saw before last year might haunt us again?
I'm concerned in the age of his velocity just diminishing at some point. As long as he's still throwing 99 plus, I mean, it's kind of a freak thing that he's doing right now. But like the Red Sox basically, you know, brought him in and told him, hey, like, don't even worry about, like, you know, pinpointing your pitches. Just your stuff's nasty. Just let it fly. No one's going to hit you. And that, you know, his walk rate dropped by 8% last year. And then, you know, as long as he's that walk rate stays there and he's throwing 99 plus, I have no concerns. I do think there was talk that the Red Sox were interested in like adding, there were some names thrown around that could be like the closer in waiting for next season, but they haven't really been too aggressive. So I feel like, you know, Chapman, the same bullpen, pretty much the seventh, eighth, ninth situation with Chapman, Whitlock and Slayton, probably, you know, they run it back next year. So Chapman's in a pretty good spot to do what he did last year, I think. As long as age doesn't catch up to him, then we should be all set.
Mike, as you know, age catches up with all of us, my friend. So are you concerned with Chapman at all?
Is that an old age joke, Bubba, on me?
I said for us. I brought you into this too.
No, he looks fantastic. I mean, honestly, I think Rick hit it right on the head that they don't really care. They just want him to go in there and throw gas, and he's got that plenty. And I think it's a pretty sure bet that he's going to be okay this year. I do have a soft spot in my heart for Garrett Whitlock always. I always think that he's going to be somebody that's going to really explode. He had a great year last year, kind of under the radar a little bit there because of what Chapman was doing. But, you know, if something should happen to Chapman, I think Whitlock could be a guy that would step in there. I feel like I've been saying that for about 5 years straight now, though. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, I was speculating on him last year in DCs, and I keep looking at it this year going, man, I should maybe do it again. But Chapman's been so good. But, yeah, to your point, I like what Whitlock's doing as well. Well, Rick, I think you and I can go take a walk. We'll let Mike have the floor here for a minute. But the Chicago White Sox are on deck. I couldn't even have planned this. This just happened to work. This was his turn. The Chicago White Sox for Mr. Carter here. It was a leisurely stroll to finish the season in Chicago. He actually was pretty darn effective after I made so many jokes about home runs earlier in the year. They have some decent options that might surprise people, is the way I'll say it. But where do you think they go in Chicago, Mike?
Well, it's interesting because what's happened here is that there's been some speculation this week that the White Sox are in on Pete Fairbanks. So are about six other teams. And he would really kind of solidify the back end of that spot for them. I don't know that I necessarily see the wisdom in going out and spending $10 million on a closer unless you're thinking that you're going to flip him. I mean, the Sox are going to be better, but they're not going to be competitive for any type of playoff run or anything like that. So I don't know how much of a sense he makes there, especially with some of his cold weather issues with the Raynaud syndrome and different things like that he's got going on. It's always cold in Chicago, even when it's hot. So something to think about there. I do think it's Jordan Leisure. I think that that's where they're kind of going with this. They were very adamant management about talking about Grant Taylor being a multi-inning weapon. There's a lot of talk that Taylor would eventually move to the rotation. I think that remains to be seen. They do have some options that are coming from the minors with Schultz and Hagen Smith. There's been some talk that Hagen Smith could end up getting into that closer talk as well. Hard to say how that's all going to work out, but I think to start the year, it'll be Leisure surrounded by Taylor and Mike Vassell, who we were talking about off camera, who was really effective last year as a Rule 5 pick. A great ground ball guy, not your prototypical closer, but a guy who was able to get the job done for them down the stretch. And they also have a lefty there named Brandon Eisert, who they're pretty high on. He's 27, so he's been around a little bit, but he was actually very good last year, big strikeout arm. So they've got some pieces there. Gonzalez is another guy that could get some run there. And last but not least, you know, Perlander Baroa was the guy that we were speculating would be the closer last year. And he's going to be back in spring training with no, you know, shackles on, it looks like, at this point. So it looks like they're going to be able to use him, too. So it would not surprise me at all if he was able to kind of jump the shark here and get into that mix, too. And, Rick, I know that the Rule 5 draft was today, too, and the White Sox did take a Red Sox prospect named Jadickson Paez.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they'll have to keep, obviously, but he's pretty live, too, right?
Yeah, he's more of a command specialist, probably like a long reliever starter. Yeah. But the other guy they got from Tampa Bay, Alberto, he's got a really interesting, you know, stuff. I mean, he throws like 99. I guess he touches 101. Just he's never made it above high A. So there's obviously a lot of risk there, and we're not sure what's there, what he really can do at the major league level. But yeah, I think the bullpen right now is actually shaping up to be pretty solid for the White Sox.
I do too. I do too. I think it could really be interesting, just the idea that they really don't have anything to lose, and why not take a chance on some of these Rule 5 guys? And quite honestly, the last couple of years, they've had pretty good success. Vasso was a Rule 5 guy. Shane Smith was a Rule 5 guy. So, like, they've had some pretty good success, and there's no reason to not try to do that. So, I like it.
I know that Rays pitcher you're mentioning from the Rule 5 draft, in the Bubba the Bloom Discord, Martin Sokolsky's in there doing a lot. He talks a lot of prospects in there. And he has said, he just found a tweet and said, this guy is filthy. That's like basically all he said is, like, to your point, Rick, like, if he can figure out the control, the rest of it could be pretty nasty when things are out there. So, yeah, like you said, Mike, why not? Why not give it?
Yeah.
If you're the White Sox, you don't want to spend money. Why not? What are we doing
here? Right.
I agree. All right, Rick, let's go to Cleveland here, where obviously Emmanuel Clase will never probably see a baseball field again, unless it's in the California Penal League. so we got Cade Smith, who I have been already saying on shows, he's a top five closer to me, because I broke him down. There might have been a relief pitching review pod or something. I can't remember what it was now. But when you look at his stat line, outside of the saves, everything else basically mimics Mason Miller. Mm-hmm. To the strikeouts, to everything. And, like, maybe not as deep as some stuff you guys, but the basic stats mimics Mason Miller. And people love Mason Miller, obviously. So I'm a Cade Smith believer. Maybe there's more there in Cleveland. I don't know. Rick, where are you at on the Cleveland Guardians?
No, yeah, I'm very in on Cade Smith. I think I have him fourth in my early closer rankings. You know, he was awesome last year. 2.32 Sierra, 28.3% K-minus walk. I think, yeah, you can still get a discount because there's the save totals aren't there, and that kind of gets, you know, kind of will let him sneak down the list, the ADP a little bit. The only real concerns, I mean, I don't think Hunter Gaddis is much of a threat to him, or anyone in that bullpen. I'm a little concerned over his workload the past two seasons. Mm-hmm. He's pitched a lot, and that's just kind of a Cleveland Guardians thing with their closers, apparently. But yeah, he's got 162 appearances, 162 innings in the past 2 years, which is definitely on the higher end for someone who, you know, his first two major league seasons, that's, you know, the type of workload he was getting. So that's a little concerning, but nothing. He missed like a week last year, but nothing really concerning, and nothing long term, no significant injuries from him last season. So I'm buying in on Cade Smith. I think this is, you know, prime potential breakout for him. Great situation with Cleveland that they, you know, get so many save opportunities, as we've seen with Clase in the past. So yeah, this is a good time to buy high on Cade Smith.
You on the same page with us, Mike? Is it Cade Smith time there in Cleveland?
Yeah, no argument.
Perfect. Let's go to Detroit then, Rao, where this is where
speaking of arguments.
I joked before the show. I said it's a good thing some signings, because I literally had to change the outline about three different times. It originally started out Will Vest question mark. Now it says Will Vest or Kyle Finnegan, because Kyle Finnegan signed like 24 hours ago with the Detroit Tigers. And we saw this play out in a many different ways last second half between injuries and whatnot. So before I give my two cents, we'll start with you guys. Mike, where do you think the dust settles on this one?
I just don't get it. Like, what is Detroit doing? Like, they have an issue at the back end of their bullpen, and they don't go out and address it by getting somebody like Helsley. They're going to try to do the Finnegan and Vest thing again. And it worked in the regular season. Does that work in the playoffs for you when you really need to get some key outs? I don't know. I mean, I would lean a little bit more towards Vest. I think he's a little bit more of an effective pitcher than Finnegan. Finnegan always gets saves, though, right? So people who are listening, you know, you can pencil that guy in for 20 saves. Somewhere, somehow, he's going to get 20. They also have Tyler Holton there, who is kind of in an odd spot, right? They use him in a variety of different ways. But, you know, he didn't get any saves last year, but he had a bunch of holds. And there's a lot of talk that he could kind of spell into this mix as well. And maybe they're not done. You know, Vest really kind of came out of, I don't want to say came out of nowhere. I mean, Rick and I had talked about him before as a guy that could kind of step into a bigger role And he did do that last year. I do that with some success. But if I were a Tigers fan, you know, Michael Govier, Marty Tallman, I'd be a little bit perturbed as to why they're not going more in on a more solid type of guy at the back end than Finnegan.
Well, they're waiting to trade Tarek Skubal, of course. That's why.
I hope not, man.
I hope they don't either, because it'll be the Dodgers if they do, and I'll lose it. Rick, where are you at on this one? Because I've heard a lot of people. This is literally a coin toss from if you ask enough people. It feels like. So where are you at?
Yeah, I'm kind of at the, you know, I'm avoiding or taking one in the last round as a flyer at this point. I do like both Vest and Finnegan a little bit. If anyone's listened to me in the past, I've not been too fond of Kyle Finnegan, but when he did go to Detroit, they changed his pitch mix. He threw his splitter 25.2% more after joining the Tigers and had incredible results with that. So that pitch mix switch should stick. So I think Finnegan will be pretty good next year there. I think Vest will be solid as well. He's not a huge strikeout guy, but you know, a lot of ground balls. They have a pretty good defense behind him, so that sinker he throws works out well for them. I think they were mentioned as like in the running for Kenley Jansen, who's still available. So I don't know if that's, you know, the one thing about AJ Hinch, it does seem like I've always been kind of skeptical that he actually wants to have like that closer type guy. I think he wants to be able to mix and match in the ninth and the eighth. So maybe that's why they keep, you know, kind of going with this, you know, they don't go out and get that big name closer. They just keep going with, you know, the Kyle Finnegans or last year there was, you know, Paul Sewald or Shelby Miller at some point. So I think, you know, with Vest, he's probably, if I had to pick one, I would go with Vest, but I'm not spending a lot of capital on either one of these guys, unless we hear like, you know, AJ Hinch wants to go with just one of them in the ninth, then that changes things. But for now, you know, maybe take a flyer on Vest or Finnegan at the end of the draft. Hope you win. Hope you get the right one, you know?
Yeah. Like the joke I think I made last night when Ryan and I talked about the signing, cause it happened. I'm like, last year in the Fab, like after the trade, it was okay if you started Finnegan, Vest got two saves that week, and then if you just sat, Finnegan, then Finnegan got the two saves. Like
absolutely,
doing that all see like the whole before Finnegan got hurt, and then Vest kind of had the gig for a bit, but it was frustrating to your AJ Hinch point, Rick. It's like he's kind of like Rocco Baldelli. Do we really want? It's a weird dynamic there. Even
before that, it was Tommy Kahnle too, It was like Vest would get two saves and then like, all right, you think he's the guy. And then Kahnle gets the next three. It's like, and then they just, yeah. So you never know.
Who was the guy? I can't even, he got sent to AAA, I think DFA'd eventually. Who the heck was it?
Jason Foley?
Bo Brisky. Yeah, Foley.
Bo Brisky. There's always somebody.
Alex Lang. They've gone through a whole group of closers in the past 2 years. So
maybe the thing is in a draft championship, just draft Tyler Holton later and see what happens. Yeah,
basically free.
He'll be free.
He is free. Yeah.
But it's a mess all around. But to your point, like you guys also said, we'll move on after this. I could see a world where each of them get 15 to 20 saves each between.
Like
there's a legit chance that happens. And so they both could have value in a roundabout way.
I think that's what the Tigers are hoping for. Yeah.
Yes. 100%. That means they're in contention if they both have that many saves. Let's head to the Houston Astros here, Rick. Josh Hader obviously had the shoulder issue last year towards the end of the season, or the shoulder arm issue towards the end of the season. He says he's fine. Coming into the season, we know how that goes. Like, let's believe it to see it. Abreu's been great, or really good at least, when he's had the chance. Where are you at here if it comes on draft day? Because just over the last month of DCs, it's been 11 completed DCs. Josh Hader still has an ADP of 64. He's one of the top, like, six or seven closers off the board, and I haven't had the courage to take that pick.
Yeah, I don't think I would as well. At this point, I think the wording of what he said, he had a quote recently where he said he should be ready for spring training. And just the fact that he said should just kind of like, I don't love that.
Usually players like overdo it with confidence. He says should.
I know. Should. Like, I'll definitely be out there. Yeah, it should. And it's the Astros too. I mean, we know the mess that they've created with their injury, you know, whatever, if it's from the training staff or just reporting injuries, it's been a kind of a mess with the Astros the last 2 years. But yeah, I mean, that injury too, it's like, you know, a capsule sprain in his throwing shoulder in August. That's typically like, that's that sometimes requires surgery and it's like a year long absence. I mean, if he is healthy this spring, if like his velocity looks good in spring training, which he's a guy who doesn't really throw, you know, 100% in spring training to begin with. Right. So that's kind of going to be annoying to see, because like we're going to see his velo down no matter what in March, but I still won't know if he's like fully healthy or not. I guess as long as he's pitching and says he's healthy, we can buy in. But for now, I'm probably avoiding, and it definitely puts, yeah, Brian Abreu on the radar as a late round pick, because they're not looking to spend any money on that bullpen. They took Rodri Munoz in the Rule 5 draft. He'll probably have like an actual significant role in that bullpen because they're short on right-handed relievers outside of Abreu. So I feel like, you know, if Hader does miss any time, Abreu would easily be the guy, the next man up there. And yeah, could be a, you know, a difference maker for you if you're able to grab him later in drafts.
What are your thoughts on the Astros pin there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm waiting on on Hader as well. I'm a little concerned about that. You know, it's been pretty quiet too, so it's a little troubling. When guys say that they should be ready, I don't like the word should when it comes to that kind of stuff. But Bubba, you know who else they have down there in the bullpen? An old friend of ours, you and I going back a couple of years, guy that we've been asking to unleash, Nate Pearson.
Every time we talk relievers, that's our guy.
It's Nate Pearson season, baby. Let's go.
Oh, ready to be disappointed once again.
But to Rick's point, there's only like two right-handers in that bullpen, and he's one of them. I think De Los Santos is maybe the other, but
yeah, Caleb Ort, De Los Santos. It's not great. Yeah,
not good. Not good. So
that'd be wild. If Nate Pearson, all you will get a text message, I promise. If that happens. All right, let's go to Kansas City. And this one is another one I'm kind of like torn on, because Carlos Estevez leads baseball in saves last year. And he was signed after Lucas Irsig, where if you drafted early, everyone wanted Lucas, like, because we saw what he did. But then Estevez gets signed. And as much as some people like downplay Estevez's skills, because yes, they're not elite skills, but we're looking for saves. The dude's got 26 or more saves in three straight years. Like that, he's at least done that. The ratios have been serviceable. So, Mike, we'll start with you here. Are you still good with Estevez? He'll be 33 this year. Or are you maybe like, I don't know, I'd rather take a chance on someone else in that bullpen?
He's a little scary to me. I'm a little worried. You know, when you peek under the hood and do a little digging around, it's not as great as what you would like to see. Irsig, who has normally had a pretty good StatCast page, but even he last year was not great. And both of them were really way down on strikeouts. I do think it's Estevez's job, and they like to have Irsig setting him up. They also added, speaking of former Detroit Tigers, they have Alex Lang there now too, who, you know, it seems to be a tweak away from actually being somebody that could be good again. I actually liked him in Detroit 2 years ago, and I drafted him all over. Didn't work out, obviously, but he's lurking there. But I do think it's Estevez. He's got the contract. He's got the deal. Depending on what happens with Kansas City and if they fall out of contention early, you know, they could maybe move him for something if he continues to do well. But, you know, saves sell, right? We got to have saves in our game, regardless of how sexy or unsexy they are. And his were certainly of the less sexy variety, I would say.
Yep. Rick, you on the same page here on Estevez, or are you saying, yeah, I don't know about that?
I'm probably not going to. I know I'm not going to get any Carlos Estevez, but I mean, he could definitely luck out again. His situation in Kansas City is ideal. I mean, great ballpark, really good defense behind him, bad division. Sorry, Mike.
Yes, it's a terrible division. That's not offensive to me in the least.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, under the hood, you know, just amongst there was 147 qualified relievers last year, and Estevez was 142nd in xFIP, 135th in Sierra, 120th in strikeout rate, 136th in swinging strike rate. Just, you know, not really the things you're looking for from a closer. But that said, there's really no competition there, especially with Irsig kind of taking a step back last year as well. They didn't bring in, they brought in Alex Lang. That's probably all they're going to bring in. I think his situation is great. And that's what definitely that's his floor right now, is just the really good situation and the chance to repeat and get 40 saves again there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. All right. We started out with the A's, who have a just mess in the bullpen. Let's go to Anaheim, where, you know, Kenley Jansen was actually really good again for what you paid for. Like, he does it every year perennially. As long as, like, if he gets signed, I'm interested. Let's just put it that way. I know the strikeouts won't be there, so we'll see. There's always a potential he returns to. He loves LA.
Yeah.
But for now, everyone's been hoping and praying that someday Robert Stevenson would be a closer. Maybe he's the guy. I don't even know if, like, he's pitched, what, like seven? I'm being sarcastic. Seven innings the last 3 years.
Who knows? I don't even think it's that much. Yeah.
Yeah. It might only be like one or two. I think
it's one. Yeah.
It's bad. It's really bad. So, with that being said, Rick, what are we doing in Anaheim? Because it might be worse than Oakland. Sacramento, I mean.
Yeah, I think Kenley Jansen, it makes almost too much sense for him just to return for a year. Mm-hmm. I know he wants the place where he's going to get saves. That just seems like an easy fit for him. But if they don't, if they're, you know, whatever, if they don't like the price or whatever it is, it does sound like Ben Joyce is probably not going to be ready for opening day as well. It does seem like Robert Stevenson will be ready for opening day. I've been a Robert Stevenson when he was that second half he had with the Rays. I still have that in the back of my memory, my mind. I want to believe that he can get back to that point. And for an inning last year, he did get back to that type of guy that we saw with the Rays. Obviously huge injury risk, but I don't think the price is going to be too, you know, ridiculous. I think it's a pretty, you know, it's a late round dart throw on someone with that type of upside. You know, Ryan Zephyrjohn's like the only other guy kind of to mention there. And he had a roller coaster of a year last year. He was really good in the first like month or two, then struggled a ton for the middle of the season and kind of picked it back up again in September. You know, Zephyrjohn does have that type of closer, you know, pitch mix that we look for. But and he's, you know, he's got health on his side where Joyce and Robert Stevenson don't. So that might be the ultimate factor there if they don't sign anyone. But I feel like, yeah, like a Kenley Jansen reunion makes sense, or even if they went and got like Kirby Yates for a year or something like that. Just feels like the Angels love veterans, even when they're not good. They'll add a veteran reliever here, I'm sure.
I agreed. Robert Stevenson, the last month, ADP is 541, which says a lot. And just for fun, Zephyrjohn, 702. So
yeah,
if you want to take darts, like, they're not the worst thing in the world. Mr. Carter, what are your thoughts on Anaheim?
The only other thing that I would add there, I think you guys are right on target. Jose Fermin is another guy that's got kind of an interesting arm and a pedigree there. But I think, they're going to sign somebody. I don't think they're going to go into it with this. I think it's a mistake to put Detmers back into the rotation. I think he was good in the bullpen. I'd like to see him out there more, but
yeah,
it's probably not going to happen.
All right, another team that usually, you know, at least we have Yoan Duranda only get 20 saves because Baldelli messes with him, or you have Griffin Jacks to set things up. We don't have either anymore in Minnesota, Mike. Justin Topa, I made the joke Topa Topa time because there's a Topa Topa IPA out in my neck of the woods, so I was my little toast to him. It was good and bad. Depends on what you want to look at. What are we doing in Minnesota?
Taj Bradley.
Dude, that would actually makes weird sense. Yes.
No, Rick and I talked about this in Arizona. I don't know. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense for him to actually move into that role. It feels like we've been waiting for him as a starter for 10 years. I know that's not true, but
is he our new Nate Pearson?
Oh, poor Rick walked into one here. He didn't even know. I think Taj Bradley makes a hell of a lot of sense as a closer, as somebody that would be a high leverage guy in the bullpen there. They really don't have any options. I mean, they got Topa, Funderburk, Cole Sands. I mean, there's just nothing there. You know, this could be a spot where if they decide to not do something like move Taj to the bullpen, which I think they should do, this could be a place for like a Jordan Romano or somebody like that too, like to rebuild value on a 1-year deal and see if he can come back. But I don't think Minnesota's going to be as bad as what people think they are, but that bullpen has got to have some work at the back end of it. I'd love to see Taj Bradley in the bullpen.
You on that same page there, Rick? Sounds like you're a Taj fan. And I love Taj too, but it's been rough lately.
Like looking at their whole AAA projected rotation, their AAA rotation looks better than their MLB bullpen at this point. So correct. I mean, one of those guys, like, you know, I feel like if they're gonna hang on to Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, and Bailey Ober, like one of those starters, some starter needs to move into the bullpen and be a high leverage arm for them, because what they have now, Justin Tope is not it. 18.3% K rate last year. I mean, Sands and Orzy are kind of interesting, but not really as closers. I feel like Jordan Romano does make a ton of sense here for, I don't know, just that feels like a Twins type 1 year deal or something. Just flip him at the deadline if he pitches well, that being said. But yeah, I love the idea of like some one of those, whoever doesn't make the rotation moving into the bullpen, at least for this year, can always move them, you know, stretch them out next year mm-hmm. if they do move on from Joe Ryan and the rest of those starters. So yeah, I mean, as far as things stand with Minnesota right now, as the roster is constructed, the only way I'm interested is if it's one of those starters moving into the bullpen.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's head to the Bronx, where David Bednar finished the year looking like the David Bednar of old, actually, which was a pleasant sight to see after the struggles for a while there. They have Camilo Duvall as a setup man who's got the experience. He's just got control issues through the roof. Trust me, witnessed it a lot.
Trust me.
So the skills are ridiculous, just no control. Mm. Rick, are we in on Bednar, or is there still like a little trepidation going, okay, it's been cool for like 2 months, but it was rough for a while.
Yeah, I'm in on Bednar. I'm not. I mean, I think I have him like 9 or 10, somewhere around there, where he's like that back end of that first relief run kind of. I want to be like all in, because like the second half, the numbers, you know, once he got demoted, when he came back, he was awesome. You know, he was the best he's actually ever been, really. 2.47 Sierra. 26.7% K minus walk, really good season for him. I have a little, yeah, just like I have a little concern, more of just like a gut thing. Like, I don't know, you know, second year now, full time in New York. They lost Luke Weaver, they lost Devin Williams. He's got Duvall and Cruz in front of him, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, the good thing is I'm not sure if Duvall and Cruz are really much of a threat, though, because like you said, there's a lot of risk there. Both of those guys have trouble throwing strikes. But yeah, I'm a little surprised the Yankees haven't been in the relief market. They haven't really done anything, so that's, you know, just kind of how it's been for them this offseason. But they really could use someone a little bit, you know, more of a sure thing in that bullpen, because there's there's upside there, but a lot of risk as well with that top three of Bednar, Duvall, and Cruz.
Yeah, that's kind of where I keep looking at him. Like, I'm cool with Bednar like you are. I don't mind it. But it just doesn't feel like the warm and fuzzies when you look at this team and what they can be. But they're crying poor because Trent Grisham made him go broke. I don't know. It's weird.
Right.
Mike, are you a bigger fan of Bednar? Are you concerned as well?
No, I've always liked Bednar. I think he's okay there. They're kind of in a weird spot too, where how are they getting to those guys? You know, what's the middle of that going to look like? You know, is it Ryan Yarbrough? Is it Jake Bird? Like, what are we doing there in that middle section? I think Bednar is fine. I would not surprise me at all if the Yankees tried to go in bigger and try to get someone. Who that would be, I don't know. But you know, it is the Yankees, so you can never count them out on anybody, really, when you think about it. I say that, and Torres is listening, and I'm sure he'll send me a text message and disagree. But
yeah, New York fans, they're always very positive on
things. Oh, yeah, it's really it's super thrilling, and not entitled in the least.
Right now, it's the Mets fans that are, you know, reeling. So at least the Yankees fans haven't been as bad.
That's why I didn't specify. I said New York as a whole. They're all doing real well right now. all right, Mike, I'm going to throw this one back to you. This one seems pretty simple. Andrés Muñoz in Seattle. Should we even really be concerned about anybody else there?
No, we can move on. I do like the addition of Ferrer there, though. They have two really good lefties now with him and Gabe Speier there behind him. Brash was great last year too. I was really happy to see him come back so strong. But yeah, it's Muñoz.
I I do worry a little bit. I mean, I'm not like I'm not out on Andrés Muñoz, but his velo did kind of disappear down the stretch. In the first half, he was averaging 99.1, second half 97.8, and then in the postseason he was at 97.4 with his fastball. He didn't really throw his fastball that much in the postseason. He was just throwing sliders, and his slider is so good that he can get away with it. I don't think it's anything injury related. Just a little bit of a thing that kind of concerns me is just that velo kind of diminishing throughout the year. But I'm still an easy top 5-6 closer for me next year.
It goes back a long way too with him, right? Though always the concern about you seen him on multiple days.
And, yeah,
A lot of that stuff that goes back since the time he was a younger guy
with the Padres. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, let's head to Tampa Bay. Another committee, it looks like, on tap here with Fairbanks out of town. You got Yuseta, Jax is around, maybe some other options the way Tampa Bay operates. Rick, how are you breaking down this Rays bullpen?
Yeah, I saw, I think, I don't know if it wasn't their manager, someone in their organization was talking about that they're going to pretty much go with a committee between Jax, Yuseta, and Garrett Clevenger. Which I guess makes sense if that's what, those are the guys that they have. Those guys all pitched, well, Clevenger pitched really well last year. Jax was hit or miss. Yuseta pitched really good down the stretch in the second half. I think if you want to take a shot on anyone here, Griffin Jax is still the guy for me because, he was incredibly unlucky last year. Him and Devin Williams might have been two of the most unlucky pitchers, relievers last year in baseball. And I think, especially getting back into the trop again, getting from, that ballpark they were pitching him last year did not help anyone outside of Junior Caminero and some of the hitters there. But, I feel like Jax, I think it was last year and even the year before, Griffin Jax was being like a top 300 pick for a guy who had no share of the save situation, really. He was just like, this is the best setup guy in the game. He's going to have, give you good ratios, a lot of strikeouts. He was getting drafted for that. So I think, if he can get back to that point and add, 10 or 15 saves, then there's huge value, especially with where he's being drafted right now. And I don't think they're going to name anyone the closer. So I feel like, between Jax, you said, and even Clevenger, one of those guys, if you can get one of them late, see how things work out. I know they really like Garrett Clevenger. I've never really thought of him as a closer type, but they did add Steven Matz, who does sound like he's going to be in the rotation and not in the bullpen, but they do have they have Mason Montgomery, they have other lefties there if they do want to give Clevenger some save opportunities. So either way, this whole bullpen's really, really good. They have Brian Baker as well, and like I said, Mason Montgomery, yeah. I think Mason Montgomery takes a step forward this year. I was maybe a year too early on him last year, but the stuff that Montgomery has is just incredible from the left side.
Yeah, the Rays are good at just developing dudes that can throw is the lazy way to say it, but they continually bring guys up that just like, okay, these guys are serviceable like throughout many stages of a game. Yeah. So, Mike, are you Team Jax or are you somewhere else? Because honestly, this could go a million ways with the Rays. So I don't think there's a wrong answer per se. But you've got to make a stand because you're on the show.
Yeah, I think if Jax is a closer for me, he's a top 12 guy. Honestly, he's really good. The stuff is there. Yuseta really seems to be better served as a multiple inning weapon for them. I would really love to see Jax really take that job on and go. But I agree with Rick. I think he's their best option. Baker is an interesting one too. He's shown a propensity to be able to get big outs at big times. So we'll see what happens, but I'm Team Jax on this one.
Yeah, I've had so many Jax shares in years past with the Twins. He better do it soon. all right, let's go to Texas Rangers. Technically, Robert Garcia is still there, and he was demoted last year, so that's a great way to start the season if that's where the Rangers want to go. I keep saying, why don't you bring Sean Armstrong back? Like, that's cheap. He was good enough. Maybe I'm wrong. Mike, where are you at on this Texas deal? Because where it stands now, I want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch this one with a 10-foot pole, quite honestly. I think Garcia is a nice guy to have, but in a setup role, seventh inning type of guy, not as a ninth inning guy. He's a little bit miscast there. Armstrong did a nice job for them coming back. A guy like Kenley Jansen, you also brought up Kirby Yates earlier, who's actually been there before. One of those guys makes a ton of sense for them. I don't think that they can go into the bullpen. It'll go into the season with this bullpen as it is and think that it's going to be you know, competitive in the AL West at all.
This bullpen looks so bad on paper.
It's real bad.
They got to, I mean, the thing is they have no money or they don't want to spend any money and
right.
They need to. I thought that's why it was weird that they gave up on like Jacob Webb for like $2 million. And like, that's at least a solid middle reliever for $2 million. Like that's, I don't know, weird that they kind of just moved on from him. And even Josh Spores, I know he didn't pitch last year, but he was a big factor when they won the World Series 2 years ago. Can pitch a high leverage innings for them. So, yeah, I mean, like, I like Garcia. I just, like you said, I don't like him. He's more of a seventh inning guy for me or like a, you know, situational lefty. It sounds like there's mutual interest between Armstrong and the Rangers to get something done. That makes the most sense, like Bubba was saying. I think Armstrong returns there. If not, yeah, maybe they have another reunion with Kirby Yates that worked out 2 years ago. And yeah, Kenley Jansen also, like you said, Mike, that's another name that makes sense for them. But they need to add someone. Yeah.
Rick, any thoughts on Teodo there? I mean, I know we saw him in Arizona 2 years ago. He might be somebody that could pop in there too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of names there, even like Michelle Otonez, who didn't pitch well last year, but has throws, you know, 99 plus, has big strikeout numbers. Mark Church, who kind of had, remember, I don't know, Mark Church had some hype about March last year because they thought he might be the closer. Then he got hurt. He didn't pitch well, and then he got hurt. And yeah, Teodo was another name too, like big stuff. Hasn't really settled into a bullpen role. They keep trying him out as like a starter, and I feel like at some point they just got to give up. And I think down the stretch last year he moved into the bullpen at AAA, but then he got hurt as well. So yeah, Teodo's a guy though, and I'm sure if he pitches well in March, there's going to be a lot of helium there. So yeah, someone in really deep leagues and dynasty formats, stuff like that, you want to keep an eye on. But yeah, they got to. I mean, this team's, you know, not exactly. Like, they got Jacob DeGrom, Nathan Eovaldi. These guys are in their late 30s. Like, go get a closer for now. You know, try to make one last push this year, whatever it's going to be. Because, yeah, that bullpen, they really need two guys, but they at least need one closer, someone with closer experience there.
Yeah, it's now or never. But I love the Teodo call. And I write PT tomorrow for HQ. I do the AL West. And I wrote about him a little after midway through the season just because – the stuff's nasty, but it's like you said, you got to stay healthy. And they were in search of closers. Garcia was struggling. Armstrong was not promoted yet. So seemed like an option at least. All right, let's wrap up the American League going to Toronto to the Jays. Rick, Jeff Hoffman got through it last year to the dismay of many towards the end of the season. It got a little rocky there, got through it. They're also rumored though, to like Robert Suarez. They've been rumored to a lot of the closers
right
now. So it doesn't feel like Hoffman's locked in, per se. So where are you at in this Toronto situation?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they want Jeff Hoffman in the closer role. They don't have a ton of confidence. And I know, I think there might have been even a direct quote that mentioned them wanting Hoffman to kind of go back to that role he had in Philadelphia as the kind of the fireman to get out of, you know, situations, high leverage arm, or whatever you want to call it. They were in on Edwin Diaz. They were on in Rafael Iglesias. They're in on Robert Suarez and in on Pete Fairbanks. Maybe they get one of them. I had to guess. I think Robert Suarez probably might end up there. That being said, if Hoffman does somehow retain this job, I still would have some interest because he had a really bad, the home run rate last year was just like, that's not something that's sustainable. How unlucky he was with home runs. I know. You know, that's been kind of a thing for him in the past, in the very distant past, but not since he became a reliever in Philadelphia. He was really good at suppressing home runs. So I feel like last year was a bit of fluky for him. As things are now, like he is the closer. I don't think anyone internally is going to give him much of a run for his money. I know Louis Varland's exciting and, if you know Jimmy Garcia can stay healthy, he's someone with closer experience there. But I feel like as things are now, Hoffman's going to be the guy, and you might be able to get a, you know, a pretty good discount on him because the price is down after last season and even I guess how things ended in the postseason as well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I'm glad you brought up the home runs because that was something I noticed when I was kind of breaking them down a couple of weeks ago for something, that it was a massive jump compared to like the struggles before. So if he regresses even like halfway to his normal, it'd be a lot better. Mike, where are you at on this Toronto situation?
I like Hoffman still. I do think that they will spend some money probably and bring somebody else in, but I really do think if Hoffman's the closer, I'm willing to take a chance on him again this year.
All right, let's head to the National League. We'll start with you, Mr. Carter. The Arizona Diamondbacks, a team that struggled for saves towards like all of last season with puck hurt and Justin Martinez gets hurt. It was just a revolving door. Better Call Saul Frank got some options. Ginkle's always a hope and a dream, and then I say he ginkles down his leg. It's a mess in Arizona, honestly. Like for a team that every year somehow feels like they're contending by the end of the year, their bullpen is in flux more often than it should be. So, Mike, entering the season now, I'd imagine they sign someone. But if they don't, how are you approaching this?
Well, they did just sign somebody that I thought should be their closer, and they're going to put him in the rotation now, Michael Soroka. I'm not interested in anything in this bullpen right now at this point. I mean, I've looked at it pretty carefully, and I just don't think that there's anybody here that really strikes my interest in fantasy, even if we're really far down the rabbit hole on that one. I'd really like to see Soroka get a chance to do it, but they signed him to starter money, and I guess they're going to give him an opportunity to do that. But it would not surprise me at all if he fails at that again and he ended up in the bullpen and actually got a few saves for Arizona. This is a kind of a barren wasteland right here.
Yes, indeed. What about you, Rick?
Yeah, it does sound like they're going to add. I think they're in on like Pete Fairbanks and Pierce Johnson, who they said wouldn't be the closer. But I mean, if he given the options here, I don't know. He might be. Kevin Ginkle has had some moments in the past. He's got like 14 career saves too. If I had to pick anyone here, it'd be him, but I'm not drafting him. Dre Jameson could be fun if he can stay healthy.
Agreed.
We've been hoping on that one for a while. So hopefully, you know, if he can stay healthy, that's the upside play here. Sal Frank's a good lefty, but not really, you know, not one of those left-handed closer types. Same with Ryan Thompson, not really a closer. So yeah, it's going to be either someone outside of this organization right now, or, you know, Ginkle does have the history and for as far as guys there go. And then, yeah, Jameson's the upside play, who really deep, really late target. It's a fun one for sure.
Yeah, I like the Jameson call. It's a guy I've always had high hopes. I'm not alone. I've had high hopes for. It's just health has not been his friend. Right. And maybe the bullpen is a way to go. Let's head to Atlanta. One of my favorites, Raisel Iglesias, re-signs with the Braves, which I call him mini Kenley. He just consistently gets saves. The ratios are still good. The strikeouts are slowly slowing down. It's just basically the Kenley profile, just a few years behind, it feels like. And I just love that steadiness. So when you look at this one, Rick, are you cool with Raisel, or are you kind of backing him up with someone else?
I was good on Raisel up until like today, and then I think the all of a sudden we got a report that the Braves were in on Edwin Diaz. I'm like, that's kind of weird. And then they're also in on Robert Suarez. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what that means for Iglesias. I mean, I would imagine he'd still be the closer there, given, you know, he's the returning option. He did struggle in the first half last year, but then, you know, made a couple tweaks. Second half, he was dominant again. He's been, like you said, he is kind of like in that Kenley frame where not too concerned about age with him. I just feel like as long as he's healthy and he's going, he's going to pitch, he's going to figure things out. Like even like the first half wasn't great, but he figured things out and turned out to be I think he was still like a top 12 relief option last year after everything was said and done. So I still just like, as far as like, you know, steadiness goes, he is, you know, one of in that top, you know, 10 to 12 reliever range. There's no one really as steady as him. I think that there's a lot more upside somewhere elsewhere, but yeah, he's a, you could be happy with him as your, you know, first closer if it ends up being him.
Mike, are you team Rysell, or is the buzz of shopping around bugging you also?
No, I wonder if the buzz of the shopping around really was the idea that, you know, Joe Jimenez had to have another knee operation here within the last month. I'm not kidding. And so he had to have another cleanup procedure, right? So I wonder if maybe the thought process there was maybe they're going to bump Rysell down into a setup role. But he's similar to Kenley for me in that role, in that I just don't see him doing anything else in the bullpen other than closing. I just don't know that he's got the ammo to be able to do that. So, yeah, I'm on Team Rysell there. I mean, I think Dylan Lee is a nice guy, but I don't know that he's going to be a closer, another one of those lefty situations where I just don't think he's going to get an opportunity.
All right, let's head to the other Chicago team. Somehow Mike gets to kick this one off as well. I am a big Daniel Palencia fan. Put a lot of fab on Daniel Palencia last year. Things went really well until he got hurt. Still looked okay, but when he came back, he kind of shared with Brad Keller a little bit. Brad Keller's gone again, Mike. So are we trusting Palencia? Because I want to, but I don't feel confident in this.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, right? You saw the playoffs and you saw him getting used in the fifth and sixth inning, and you were kind of wondering what the story was there. Council's got a little bit of that to him too, where he doesn't really – he's not super predictable on how he's going to use the bullpen guys. You know, last year at this time, we were all talking about Porter Hodge, even though he's got a weird fastball. So they signed Phil Maton, who I don't think is a closer at this point in his career, a nice setup guy. The guy that I've always been interested in, and Rick's going to laugh heartily when I say this, but I don't understand why they don't let Ben Brown just unleash in the bullpen. You know, he's a guy that I think of all these guys that we're mentioning here, he would be the best guy if he was to be able to get a run at doing it. But yeah, it's probably Palencia unless they sign somebody else at this point. But I'd love to see Ben Brown get a shot here.
Yeah, no, I'm fully with you on the Ben Brown. We with Ryan, we did a Bloom board, I think, recently, and Ben Brown's was at the top of the risers chart, and we dug in on him with this basically two pitches. Mm-hmm. He fits it really, really, really well. So I'll jump in there, but now back to you, Rick. What are your thoughts on this Palencia? Because like I said, I love this guy. I have shares of this guy, but I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I mean, I love Palencia, the pitcher. I think, you know, he came back in the postseason, was kind of working the sixth inning. I don't know. It does seem there's been like mixed reports on whether the Cubs are like in on these relievers or not, like some of the closers that are out there. So I'm not sure if they are like in love with the idea of Palencia starting the year as the closer. But if he is, I mean, I everything he did last year, and I think it's sustainable too. I mean, this is the type of guy. He was a kind of a hyped up relief prospect for a while, and last year we finally saw it. In a similar vein to like where, you know, Jeremiah Estrada kind of, it took him a while, but he finally broke out, finally figured it out. I feel like that's where we're at with Palencia. I'd be really happy with him as a closer. And as far as, I love Ben Brown too as well. I don't understand why he needs to just stick in the bullpen. I think this year finally it's going to happen because they're a little bit deeper. I'm sure they're going to add a starter there too, but they should have enough depth there where Brown doesn't need to start. And I think Hodge can bounce back, but he's more, and even last year, it's like, he's more of a setup guy. His fastball is not great. Slider's really good. I like him more in a seventh inning, eighth inning role, and Maton as well. I really like Phil Maton. He's not even just that he doesn't throw hard, but he's just not really someone I would trust as a closer there. So yeah, Palencia is the guy for now for me. I think the only way that Palencia doesn't get the job is if they sign Robert Suarez or make some sort of trade that we're not expecting. So yeah, I feel pretty safe with Palencia. And once they traded Andrew Kittredge, I was like, okay, that's
true.
That kind of made me feel a little bit more, you know, like he feels like almost safe at this point because there's just not a ton of options there. And the Cubs were like, we don't want to spend a lot on a reliever this year. So yeah, he feels pretty safe to me right now with, you know, some more upside to it, because I think that strikeout rate can even grow for him. I think he's got that type of stuff.
True. I love it. Love the Palencia pub here. Let's go to the Reds, where they brought back Emilio Pagan on a two-year deal after coming out of nowhere last year, essentially, to be one of the top relievers in baseball. Are we cool going back to that well, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, he could be fine again. You know, I know he pitched well last year. That ballpark still scares me for him and just his home run tendencies in the past. There was some luck involved last year. You know, usually his splitter gets hit around a lot. Usually his BABIP for his splitter is usually around 400. Last year it was at 182 out of nowhere. So he was able to get left-handed hitters out more than he had been in the past. I don't know if that's something that is going to be able to he's able to sustain. So if he does regress there, there's going to be some regression there. You know, that said, the competition behind him, I know Tony Santillan pitched well last year. I'm not a huge believer in him. It's the other guy, and there's a bunch of, like, you know, Zach Maxwell would be super. I would love that. That would be very fun to see that man closing out games, you know, kind of Jonathan Broxton-esque, where he's like 6'5", 300 pounds, just throwing gas, closer stuff from him. But until that happens, yeah, it's probably going to be Pagan. And yeah, I kind of go back and forth, but I'm more or less fine with it, with him. I don't know, you know, where I would be taking him or where, like, the cutoff is, but I think right now he's in that middle tier, like 15, 16 range for me as far as closers go. Because, you know, at least he does have the job. We know that, but there is some concerns I have with him for next year.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I'm nervous as well. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you guys are both saying on that. I love Graham Ashcraft as well. I keep wishing he would get an opportunity.
DC shares love him. Yes,
I know, but you know, I think it's Pagan's job at this point, so I'm willing to go with that. I would not take him as my number one closer, but as a second guy, depending on the depth of the league, I think I'd be fine with that.
All right, as I wrote this. Yes, saves matter wherever you can get them. But Colorado Rockies, I literally wrote, does it matter? So, Mike, like, we've done the Victor Vodniks. We've done a handful of guys. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes, for most of the time, it does not end well. So where are you at right now with Colorado?
I learned a hard lesson last year with Seth Halverson.
Another one.
Didn't work out real well. You know, Vodnik ended up having a pretty decent season on paper when you looked at it. But he's more of a ground ball pitcher. You know, he's got the, you know, the exploding, you know, fastball that looks more like a slider kind of thing going. And anyway, I wouldn't touch this one either. I don't think that there's anything good that's going to happen there. And I don't see anybody coming that is going to ease that burden and worry for Colorado fans. It'll probably be Vodnik again, set up by Hergett and Halverson. That I'm just not terribly interested in it.
I'll give it to you, Rick. Does it matter to you?
Probably not. The Rule 5 guy they took, the first pick in the Rule 5 draft today, RJ Pettit's kind of interesting. Yeah. I don't know if he works his way into a closer role, but 6'8", 300 pounds, throws 98, has a good slider. Kind of a fun guy to look at. Jaden Hill, you know, Juan Mejia's kind of interesting, but none of these guys are, I'm not drafting any of these. And it's like you said, like, we look for saves anywhere you can get them, but, like, thinking back to last year in NL only tout, and, like, I don't think any of these, Seth Halverson might have been rostered for a little bit at the beginning of the season, but I mean, it's even in, like, leagues like that, it's really tough to trust these Rockies guys. You know, sometimes I look, like, if they're on the road for a week, like, maybe I'll stream someone there if there's good matchups. But that's about as far as I go with the Rockies bullpen.
Yep. Can't disagree with that. I'll tell you that much. Rick, we'll jump back to you now with the Dodgers. You know, Tanner Scott was a rocky road last year. The kind of tongue-in-cheek I say is, a team that's won back-to-back World Series had a weakness last year, and that was their bullpen. Well, they went and signed Edwin Diaz, who, outside of a hiccup a couple years ago, has been pretty much one of the best closers in baseball perennially. What's your thoughts on Diaz in LA? Like, I guess the biggest question is, a lot of people initially said RP1. Does that jive with you?
I think he's definitely in the conversation. I have him second right now, but I could see him being one. Probably the safest, you know, one of safer than who my RP1 is. I don't know. It's always, and I know it's a good situation he's landing in, but I always do have a little bit of concern for, you know, first year, especially closers, like first year in a new team, in a new situation. There's been, you know, definitely mixed results from that in the past. I feel like Diaz should be fine there. I don't think there's much. I saw some talk about, like, is he going to definitely see every save chance? Like, I think there, I mean, because we weren't sure with Tanner Scott last year. It's like he's getting paid to close, but is he going to see every save chance? And like Diaz is definitely a different like, animal. He is the closer there. He might not see every single one, but he didn't really see every single one of the Mets anyway, and was still very valuable. They would bring him in the eighth inning here and there. So yeah, I'm pretty, you know, one or two, probably not even, I wouldn't go long, like below four as far as him. Like if he's the fourth reliever off the board, you're getting a steal there probably. Yep. So, yeah, not many concerns with Edwin Diaz.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, they just, you know, what do they have? About $130 million spent in their top two bullpen arms there in Los Angeles now.
I think, yeah, between Diaz, Tanner Scott, and Blake Treinen, I think they're all due $52.5 million this next season, which is just a wild amount.
Yeah, I mean, it's Diaz, and I agree with what Rick said. He's not my number one either, but he's in the conversation. They're going to be really nasty.
Yeah, it's filthy, and if anybody's got a 40 save potential, it's probably him right about now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mike, let's head to the Marlins. Another great place to be. Is it Ronnie Enriquez? Is it Calvin Fauché? Do we go somewhere else? Like, they could even bring in like Kenley Jansen if they actually wanted to spend money, because that would make sense as well. So how do you look at the Marlins situation?
I find it interesting because they've got three guys that I feel are fairly similar in some ways, and that they're, none of them are really cast as a closer in a typical sense. Enriquez was more intriguing to me of those three, you know, between Fauché and Tyler Phillips. I think this one's ripe for a signing. I mean, Fairbanks makes a lot of sense here for them too. I think if they want to pony up $10 million and get a closer, they really could use a capital C closer, as we say, right? Like to go in there. And Fauché was great, but similar to what we were talking about earlier, right? You'd bench Fauché and then, you know, he'd get three saves. And then you'd say, oh, you know, maybe it's Enriquez now. He'd get two or three in a row. And then all of a sudden it was Phillips. You know, you just can't win on this one. So until it's a little bit clearer for me, I don't see myself spending any type of high draft collateral on any of these guys at this point.
Yep. Yeah, I don't disagree there. What about you, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, they've been linked to a couple closers. I know Fairbanks is definitely one, and that probably makes the most sense for them. I feel like that's kind of where if I had to guess where Fairbanks is going, that feels like a good spot for him. Florida there. But I do think, you know, the best pitcher in that bullpen is Ronnie Enriquez. He had success, or he had value even not being a full-time closer there. So I don't hate drafting Enriquez at some point, depending on, you know, the value there. Cause I think the skills are legit. The strikeout numbers, should stick. Like you said, I think they like him kind of more like the Rays, like you know, Edwin Uceta, more of a multi-inning relief role where he can come in the sixth inning, get them out of jams if needed. So I don't see Enriquez being a full-time closer, but as far as guys in that bullpen go, that's the one name I would, you know, be interested in rostering right now.
Yeah, and I agree. I'm glad you mentioned that. I think Enriquez is the best pitcher. Just it hasn't played out that way at times, which is frustrating, of course. Another frustrating situation is the Brewers, because I like Trevor Megill a lot. I took him last year at his price tag. I know he's not perfect by any means, but he got saves. The injury concerns me. Abner Uribe is really good. Mm-hmm. When Megill came back from the IL, Uribe kept the job. Again, late postseason, things are different. We've seen things revert before to opening day from time to time. How are you guys approaching this bullpen right now, Rick, with Megill? Like, it feels like they almost want to use Megill so they could trade him.
Yeah.
It's a weird dynamic.
It does sound like, and yeah, I think it was someone on MLB Network saying that believe that Trevor Megill will be traded this offseason, because I think, as you know, the Brewers are trying to shed some money here, and Peralta's one is obviously the bigger name, but I think Megill too. He'll probably be owed not a ton in arbitration, but for the Brewers, they you know, they're always trying to kind of nickel and dime things in that pitching staff. So I think Megill might be out, but if assuming he does stay, if it's between Megill and Uribe, I think they would still kind of lean towards Megill as the closer, you know, partially based on seniority, but also because, you know, if they are going to eventually trade him, which they will eventually trade him, he's not going to go to free agency with them. You know, they'll probably try to boost his value, get him as many saves as possible. And things really were working out great with, you know, Megill in the ninth, Uribe in the eighth. That was one of the better situations in baseball last year until Megill got hurt. So that is the concern with Megill wherever he lands. It's, you know, he has not been able to put together a full season yet. So, you know, tons of upside. I was, you know, really in on him last year. He was great until he got hurt. And I think he showed in the postseason, at least he was able to bounce back from that injury. Mm-hmm. No lingering effects, it looked like. So I'm still interested in Megill. Just depends on where he is, what the price point is, and what his role is. Because, if they do go to some sort of committee between him and Uribe, then I'd probably prefer Uribe just because he's going to be cheaper, I'd imagine, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
Totally. I agree 100%. I love Milwaukee's bullpen, though. They have so many interesting guys in that bullpen that you can look at. Ashby, D.L. Hall, just all kinds of different looks they can give you. I do think that they will trade Megill. I do think Uribe will be their closer by the end of the season.
All right, let's go to Queens. Happy, happy Queens. They signed Devin Williams about a week or so ago. They're still rumored to Edwin Diaz. They've been rumored to Robert Suarez. Mike, I am a big Devin Williams believer. Should we believe he's the closer to start the season for the Mets?
Yes, yes, yes. There was a lot of bad luck there last year. And I tell you, I know, shout out to the Yankees fans. The Yankees defense is horrific and really caused Devin Williams some problems. There's a lot of bad luck there. When you look under the hood and start poking around, he's still Devin Williams. And so I'm willing to give him a mulligan on this one and be back in on him. I do think the Mets do have an interesting making for a bullpen there with, you know, Reed Garrett's going to be out for a while. I think I don't know if he's out for the whole season or not.
But, he will be.
I think that he is,
Tommy
John, AJ Minher and, old Chicago Cub Adbert Alzolay is lurking in that bullpen too. Man. And if he could ever figure it out, he could be a really solid middle of the bullpen type of guy for them. But yeah, it's Devin Williams. I'm all in.
Yep. What about you, Rick?
Yeah, I think they're going to add at least one or two more bullpen arms because they need to. But I think there'll be more depth pieces unless even if it's like Robert Suarez, I would prefer Williams, I think, over Suarez as closer. I don't know if the Mets would if they did make that signing. But yeah, I'm pretty, now that Diaz is gone, I'm pretty confident Williams will be the guy there. And yeah, he really bad luck. Like you said, with that Yankees defense. And like I remember watching because I'm like, what is going on with Devin Williams every time he had a bad outing? And going back and just like, you know, ground balls are getting through that shouldn't have been getting through. And just like, you know, there should be, like, especially up the middle next year of Lindor and Simeon behind him. That's a really good duo there defensively. So he should bounce back next year. He was a lot better in the second half in the postseason as well. So I know Yankees fans and even Mets fans definitely don't want to hear that Devin Williams. I mean, I think Devin Williams can be just as, that's not the reason why the Mets are going to, like, you know, fall off next year. It's not because they went from Edwin Diaz to Devin Williams. I'll say that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned the last 2 months. Like, he was still very, very good. Yeah. And as someone that he was one of my most rostered players last year, so I went through the pain of watching those games as well, Rick. It was lovely to see. Let's go to Philadelphia, where this team's set in stone. Johan Duran he's always been really good. He just got baldellied. Now he doesn't in Philadelphia. They even gave him this amazing intro. He's the dude, and he's into the top five world for me as a locked in closer now. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, very solid 5-6 closer for me. Would like to see his strikeout rate kind of go back. It's declined slightly every season, but I mean, the stuff's still there. He's still getting weak contact. So yeah, he's still elite closer option.
Yep. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, no argument there. You know, I'm Jose Alvarado guy, but for a long time, but it's never really worked out for me. So yeah, Duran is going to be the guy there, no doubt.
All righty, let's head to Pittsburgh, where it's got a little interesting over the last 24 hours. Like, Dennis Santana, just people are like, okay, whatever, Dennis Santana's the closer. Like, he was good enough last year, probably overachieved a bit, but served the purpose when Bednar was out of town. But then the Pirates just signed Gregory Soto, and some people might scoff at this, and fair enough. Gregory Soto at one point was a very good closer. Mm. He's got swing and miss stuff, and this is Pittsburgh. So, Mike Carter, is it still Santana, or like they say, if there's smoke, there's fire in this situation?
Well, you know, they had no lefties in their bullpen until they signed Soto. So getting Soto there makes a lot of sense for them. And we've seen him close a little bit. He's been successful at it in the past. I don't know what their thought process there is, but another guy that's lurking here that I would love to see get an opportunity there. I don't know that Dennis Santana is your prototypical closer, although he did a really nice job for them last year. But Justin Lawrence was phenomenal for them in a small sample size. And going back to his Colorado days, he was always a guy that was rumored to be the next closer there, along with Tyler Kinley and people like that. Lawrence looked like he might have uncovered something there a little bit last year. I know he only pitched a handful of games, maybe 15 or 20 games, but the strikeout stuff was there. You know, he was limiting hard contact. He looked like kind of he was reborn. Two pitch mix again. Somebody to keep an eye on, a flyer maybe in a deep league, Justin Lawrence. Getting out of Colorado is usually good for pitchers.
What about you, Rick? You got anybody to get excited about there?
No, I like the Lawrence shout out. That's a guy, Jake Crumpler, my independent co-host, is a big Lawrence believer as well. Yeah, I like Santana a lot. I just don't love him as a closer either. Mm-hmm. He needs to throw his slider more. His fastball is not very good. Soto is interesting. I think, yeah, they brought him in, I think, A, because like you said, they don't have any lefties outside of, I think, Evan Sisk potentially. But also he does give them some closer experience if things go wrong with Santana. They have some experience there in Soto as well. But yeah, like, Lawrence is a great shout out. He did pitch really well, only 17 innings, but the strikeout rates were great last year. Him and Carmen Mladzinski pitched really well in relief down the stretch as well for them. So those are kind of some names to keep an eye on. Especially if the Pirates do, you know, if they don't have a great season next year, you know, they could be looking to move Santana and Soto at the deadline, opening up some things for Lawrence and Mladzinski down the stretch.
Yeah, Mladzinski's a guy I always kind of keep in my queue late in drafts right now, just as someone to potentially speculate on. So I like that shout there. All right, let's go to San Diego, where recent news said Mason Miller staying in the bullpen, and for that reason, he's my RP1. I'm hoping that's where some of these little innuendos that you keep saying without saying names are going here. I could be alone on this island. I don't think I am. Rick, what are your thoughts on the San Diego bullpen?
Yeah, it's Mason Miller is my number one closer right now. All in on him. I was very excited to see that he's going to be staying in the bullpen. Yeah. He was obviously really good before landing in San Diego and then just took another step forward, threw his slider more down the stretch, became more of a 50-50 pitch mix between his slider and fastball, and was just – he was really in like another class by himself in the last 2 months of the year. Led all relievers in, like, I could go through all the categories he led relievers in over the last 2 months. I mean, pretty much everything that we look at, strikeout rate. I had a 51.1% strikeout rate in the last two months of the season, which no one can get to. Like, Felix Bautista, like, 2 years ago maybe touched that. But, like, no, that's just unheard of stuff from Mason Miller. So, obviously, we need to see, like, the only thing holding him back, I think, right now is just health. Like, but he was healthy last year, got through all of last season. So until he does break down, I'm not concerned. I'm all in on him being the first reliever off the board.
Full agree. Mike Carter, anything to add to this amazing reliever in San Diego?
Yeah, he's the best. He's my 1-1 as well. He's going to go really high in most places, and he should. He's just absolutely fantastic. There's no flaws other than being worried about injury.
And the situation, too, I mean, like, it's perfect. He's got Morejon and Estrada getting them the ball, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, you got a lockdown 7th and 8th inning guy. And, yeah, just that Padres bullpen we've seen with Robert Suarez gets a lot of good save opportunities there for whoever the closer is. So, yeah, just a perfect stars kind of aligning for Mason Miller to have a huge year.
And right now, over the last month in the NFBCD season, relief pitchers go early for those that aren't aware of the format just because of what goes on. But and if you go to the NFBC, if you're not used to it, it's just pitchers only, so it's not separated. But we know the drill here. Pitchers 10 through 14, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, all closers. From pick 33 to pick 42, it goes Andrés Muñoz, Edwin Diaz, Mason Miller's third, but literally a half a pick behind Edwin Diaz. So basically the same guy, Johan Duran, Cade Smith. So there's your top five off the board right now. And I think we obviously not in that order, but I think we could all be like, okay, those top five pretty close to checking out for sure. But just goes to show you, if you want one right now early, you'll get one early. Because they're in round three in a 15-teamer right now. So get after it.
And once that run starts, you got to make sure you're within five or six picks of those guys because, you'll miss out.
Yep. All right, couple more here. God, someone give me some hope here. San Francisco Giants, Ryan Walker. I love what Ryan Walker has done. He is not a full-time closer right now because unless he figures out his swinging strike again, which completely disappeared last year. I love them as an opener or a piggybacker. That was a great role he had. Multi-inning guy. Like, he was really good a couple years ago, and they, whatever. Stuff happens. Mike, what do you got on the Giants here? Because they've either traded or hurt the most options recently.
Yeah, they really need to do something, I think. I don't think that Walker is really a closer. I loved how they used him 2 years ago when, like you said, Bubba, opener, sometimes getting saves, sometimes pitching the fifth and sixth inning, multiple kind of innings that way. The Giants, I think, have been rumored to be in on just about everybody that's come up so far. It really makes a lot of sense for them to go after somebody that could close. Suarez or somebody like that would make sense and a little bit higher profile. It being the Giants, it wouldn't be surprising either if they, took out their rabbit's foot and gave Liam Hendricks $5 million or something like that in hopes that he can come back and become a closer again. I don't think that's a prudent move, but it's something that the Giants would seemingly do. Although Buster Posey seems to be a little bit more all in here. I would guess that they're going to augment the back end of that bullpen and bump Walker down into a multiple inning role or use him in that hybrid that they did a couple years ago rather than the closer.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Rick, what are your thoughts on this Giants conundrum?
Yeah, I mean, I agree on Walker. He's a good reliever, not really a closer. The fastball is just not where it needs to be for him, your prototypical closer. That said, I don't know really what else. I mean, like, the Joel Puguero is crazy stuff, but the production's just never been there at any point in his career. So it's not someone you can really rely on. So they need to – I'm surprised, we haven't heard more of, like, Robert Suarez or Pete Fairbanks linked to them or any of the – I would imagine, the Giants are looking to add pitching this offseason. Definitely includes the bullpen. So I feel like, Suarez or Fairbanks make a ton of sense for them. Mm-hmm. Even if they bring back – if they bring back, like, Tyler Rogers, is that someone who – I know Rogers is definitely not your prototypical closer type, but he's a guy who can pitch every inning and is – more or less effective every time he's out there. So
he would close for them if they signed him.
I think so too. Maybe that's part of the appeal to get him back. I don't know. There's definitely some options. Maybe, like you said, it's like a Hendricks or some sort of veteran they take a flyer on. But I think if they go in hoping Ryan Walker's the answer in the closer role, that's going to be a mistake.
It's a mistake. They will sign someone. That's kind of where I'm. That's where I'm at right now. Like, Walker's good enough to do other things. I think they signed someone. We have a list of. It's a smaller list than it was a few days ago of the free agent kind of potential closers out there. And they've been linked to at least three of the guys on that list that I have of five. So, yeah, we'll see how that pans out. Two more here. St. Louis Cardinals. Ryan Helsley obviously traded last year. Jojo Romero was expected to be the guy. He got some run. Riley O'Brien looked pretty good at times. It seems like early on in draft season here, people are on the Riley O'Brien train. I'm kind of like, this is why I listen to you guys. Rick, where are we at on the Cardinals pen?
I'm buying more into O'Brien at this point. I think Romero's, kind of some of the, under the hood numbers don't look great for Romero, but also his name keeps being thrown around in trade talks. He's only got, 1-2 years left on his deal. The left-handed relief market, especially now that Soto's gone, left-handed relievers in free agency right now, it's pretty much all those 38-year-old dudes who you're getting for 1 year. If teams are looking for someone with a little bit more upside, more years left on their deal, they might be looking for Romero. So Romero could be on his way out. Kind of gives me hope O'Brien becomes the closer. Not a big strikeout guy, but throws 99 with his sinker, gets a ton of ground balls. That defense behind him should be pretty good. So the ground ball, his repertoire works for what he is. I do really like Matt Swanson there. I don't know. Again, I don't know. His name hasn't really been thrown into the closer mix yet. But if there was someone outside of those two to look at, I think Matt Swanson is definitely a name to watch. He was really good over the second half, had a 32.8% K rate in the second half. They do have some other, Ryan Fernandez could take a step forward or, bounce back from last year. Andre Granillo's kind of an exciting relief prospect. And I don't know if he starts the year in the bullpen or not, but there's some other guys there. But I think O'Brien probably gets the first chance for them. And yeah, not someone I'm thrilled to roster, but given the price, if the price is right, sure, it's solid second or third option for you.
What about you, Mike? You on the O'Brien train?
Yeah, O'Brien seems to be the guy at this point, but Rick and I in Arizona had talked a lot about Swanson too, and he was in our presentation in a couple of places, a real name to know there. I think O'Brien starts with the job. I do think Romero probably gets traded. He's better suited in a setup role, even though he's had some moderate success in the closing role, which surprised me, quite honestly. I didn't think he was going to do as well with it as he did.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's wrap up the National League with the Washington Nationals. They trade Fair, who finished the year after Finnegan got traded. I thought maybe they'll bring Finnegan back. We'll do this again for the second straight year. I feel like they have to bring someone in, but maybe they don't do the Nationals. So, Mike, we'll start with you. If you're looking at this Nationals pin, how do we attack it for fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, the only guy here that they have on the roster that would be of mild interest to anybody is Clayton Beter, who was a high draft pick a few years ago and kind of fell into obscurity and came up and did a fairly nice job for them down the stretch. And looking at his stat cast and getting ready for the podcast tonight, he did some pretty good things. I mean, the strikeout rate's 31.7%. Whiff rate was almost 33%. Fastball velo is pretty high. The biggest problem that he has is that he has no idea where it's going after he throws it. 17.3% walk rate. It's like little league, but there's pedigree there. There's some idea that maybe he could be there. And I think Washington might actually be better than people think they're going to be. They've got some young guys that kind of need to take that next step forward, but they've got some talent there. So, maybe they don't go out and spend a lot of money on a closer, but maybe add somebody there at the back end, a guy like a Yates or somebody like we were talking about earlier, just to kind of fill in there. But if they don't, Beter is probably the best option. And that's not saying much. I know that.
What about you, Rick? Are you in the Beter camp or just hoping they sign somebody?
Yeah, it's Beter or bust. The walk rate's obviously a concern, but the second half, that strikeout rate, 38.1% strikeout rate over the second half, really good stuff. Closer S stuff, the command rate, which we see with all these young guys, that's going to make or break his career. But if he can just get that walk rate down closer to 10%, I know it could be a big ask. There's breakout potential for Clayton Beter. I do think, yeah, I think they should bring in a veteran though to at least, you know, start the year or give him some competition.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, at some point, I know it's like a new regime there in Washington, but they're kind of close. I mean, they have some interesting pieces. They should be trying to compete. Yes. So like, bring in a veteran. It's not going to cost them too much. Especially like you said, Kirby Yates shouldn't cost a lot. I don't know. So any one of those veterans should be like a cheap one year, you know, under $10 million deal. Just bring in some competition there because yeah, I was excited for Ferreira this year. I thought he was going to be kind of a sleeper. But yeah, now he'll do good things in Seattle, but yeah, unfortunately it does not help us for save only leagues.
Jose Leclerc season. Jose Leclerc.
Oh, man.
Like, weirdly enough, though, that could work. And
sure.
So that's the scary part. It could work. All right. We'll do a couple quick hitters here real quick. Just kind of get your guys' thoughts on where these players land. And if people are drafting now, are they worth drafting to be a closer type thing? Because some of these guys might not be closing. Like first game list, Robert Suarez. A lot of people are saying wherever he goes, he might not be guaranteed a closing gig. It's very possible. So, Rick, we'll start with you. Where do you think Robert Suarez lands, and is he worth specking on for saves?
I think, yeah, because, I mean, I've seen him linked to Toronto and Atlanta. Toronto, he would be the closer there. I think Atlanta, he wouldn't be. I think Toronto does because they have been over. They've been in on kind of every closer or reliever, and they're clearly not afraid to spend money right now. So I think the Blue Jays end up making a deal with Suarez, and he is the closer there. But yeah, it's you know, between that or the Cubs could be a sneaky contender there too as well. And I would like to see the Giants kind of in the mix as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If he goes to the Cubs, does that screw over Palencia?
It would. I think there was some talk about Suarez with the Cubs today. I don't know how accurate it is, but yeah, the Blue Jays are going to make a splash in one of these relievers. And I think Suarez is kind of the name for them.
Yeah. The thing is with Suarez for me, I think is that he's only going to go to a place where he's told he's going to be the closer. I mean, why would he go someplace else and pitch in the seventh inning? Unless they're willing to pay him an ungodly amount of money to do so.
Right.
You know, the other team we mentioned them earlier on, it seems like it was hours ago, but you know, the Angels are a team that had some money to throw around foolishly.
Yes.
And might do something like add Suarez.
Yeah. Could see that.
That makes sense as well, actually. Mike, we'll go to you on this one. Sean Armstrong. We talked Texas. I think he saves there, but where do you think Sean Armstrong lands, and does he get saves?
Yeah, I think Texas would be a great spot for him just because he's got some history there with them. But you could also see him going to a team like the Nationals, who we were just talking about, or you know, maybe a team like the White Sox maybe could make sense. You know, we were talking about that a little bit earlier, that they might look for somebody there, but he did a nice job. I was surprised at how well he did in that role. But I think Texas is probably where he ends up back at.
What about you, Rick?
Yeah, I think Texas too is probably the safe bet. Yeah, he's a very interesting, like, I think he expanded his pitch mix last year, and he doesn't throw hard, but he throws like four pretty good pitches. So he was able to make it work. I think he could have another good season, especially in Texas, where we saw some success last year. But I like what you said too about the Nationals. That was kind of my second thought, is that seems like this seems like the type of guy the Nationals should be in on. If they are or not, who knows?
All right. Pete Fairbanks. He's rumored. I've heard him as one of the Giants guys, and he's been rumored a lot of places. Rick, where do you think Fairbanks ends up?
He's been, I think there's at least 8 or 10 teams I've seen his name pop up. I feel like one of the first ones though was the Marlins. I feel like that just makes sense. They like we talked about, they need like that capital C closer. They're another team who they could be pretty like sneaky. They could be okay, especially if you solidify the back end there. They might be able to surprise some people this year. So I feel like if they're going to spend money too, like that's like a place where they don't have to spend too big. They can get Fairbanks for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the team for me.
Yeah. Arizona and Texas make a lot of sense for him too, I think.
Texas does. I don't know if they have the money though. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. That's an issue.
Or want to spend the money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Want to. Correctly, yes. Arizona makes a lot of sense, actually. That's another one that kind of goes under the radar, at least for me. I forget about them all the time, and that would be a really good landing spot for both of them. Kenley Jansen, Angels, White Sox. Like, there's a lot of places he could go. Mike, where do you think Kenley Jansen ends up?
Yeah, I think the Angels make a lot of sense back there. Maybe Texas, too. There's always been – it seems like he's been linked to Texas a lot the last couple of years. Maybe the Cubs as well, you know. They're looking for a guy to kind of stabilize that back end where they could use Palencia as more of a weapon that they deploy earlier in the game like they did in the playoffs.
Rick?
Yeah, I think – Angels are making more sense. I think he's going to wait. He's going to be probably one of the later ones to sign. He's going to wait to see which closer role is still open in January and make a decision. But yeah, the Angels return there makes sense. I also thought the A's could make some sense. Yep. Might not be the best spot for him from a ballpark standpoint, given his fly ball tendencies. But yeah, I feel like the A's are another team where, you know, that lineup's really good. The pitching obviously needs some work, and they could definitely use like a capital C closer. So.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere on the West Coast for Jansen, I think.
And the last one I have written down is Luke Weaver. A lot of people don't think he's a closer, but the Giants have been linked to him. Like, that's another Nationals type target. Like, he was good at one point, got hurt. Like, there's skills there. Tell me I'm crazy if you want, Rick, but is there a world where you see him signing somewhere and closing?
Yeah, I feel like the Giants, that is the one spot I feel like that fits for the team and the player. I think he would pitch really well there.
I'd be okay with that, honestly. I'd be excited about that.
Honestly, considering the alternatives at this point, yeah, I feel like Weaver a little down last year, but still had like a 20% K-minus walk rate. The skills were still there. I think the Giants would be a good spot for him.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, depending on cost, I think the Mets could really make a run at a guy like Weaver. They could really use a guy in the middle there to help them out. I still think Devin Williams would be the closer there, obviously, if Weaver signed. Yeah, it would be.
Guys.
It would be. It could happen. It could happen.
For sure.
Subway Series gets lit real quick. All right, they'll go back and forth. Rick, anybody else that I forgot that you think could be a potential closer that's on the free agent market?
I don't know what Brad Keller's role is going to be. He was really good as reliever next year, but I guess there's been some talk about him going back into the rotation, which doesn't make sense because he's never had success there and never really was close to having success as a starter. But last year as a reliever, especially in the second half, he showed he could be a closer, I think. So he's a name, and Sir Anthony Dominguez has some closer experience. Yep. That's definitely bottom of the barrel, but maybe like a team like the Nationals for Sir Anthony Dominguez, where he could go there for a year and close out games, makes sense, something like that. You know, for I think those are the two guys outside of like Kirby Yates, who's a little bit deeper down and a little bit more concerns with Kirby Yates. Yeah.
Anybody else, Mike, that we have not mentioned yet?
We talked a little bit about Romano earlier. You know, it wouldn't surprise me to see him land somewhere on his feet there. Another guy that Rick and I have talked about as well that could be an interesting relief pitcher is Chris Paddock. I don't know what his role will be moving forward. Evan Phillips is coming back off of injury. He might get a shot somewhere else as well. Tommy Canley is out there. Just some of those types of guys that come around. And Paul Sewald has closing experience, even though he's not done it in a while. He's somebody that could land in he's a 35-year-old guy that could land in Washington as a closer. You'll have to see what happens.
All make plenty of sense, but we will wrap it up there. Outstanding stuff, guys. We went through all 30 teams, some free agents, less than 2 hours. That's awesome. Really good stuff there. Before we head out of there, Rick, remind everybody where they can find you, what you got going on, as you're always pumping stuff out over there at PitcherList.
Yeah, you can find me on, you know, Twitter or Blue Sky at I am Rick Graham. Currently just kind of getting ready for early season draft guide stuff, putting together a saves plus holds list. Should be out sometime in January. But yeah, other than that, just doing a podcast, the independent podcast with Jay Crumpler every other week.
Awesome. Okay, Mike, what about you? Busy guy over there as well.
Yeah, you know, doing the stuff at Fantrax still with the bullpens. I writing a couple pieces at Rotoballer during the week as well, moving forward. Still doing the podcast, the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast with Dave Funnel right now. Chris is taking a little bit of a break, and you know, don't know how that's all going to work out. I hope that he comes back at some point, but he's doing the family thing and totally understand that. And looks like I'll be getting in over at HQ as well, covering the White Sox and playing time stuff. So I'm working on getting that set up. I'll definitely have enough to keep me busy in the spring, guys.
Ooh, no doubt about that. See, one kid leaves the nest, he just picks up more work. Wait till a couple more years and Jack leaves, and who knows what Mike's going to be up to.
Oh, my gosh. It'll be funny. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you joining me. It's great to have you on. Great to have you on for the first time, Rick. We need to do this again. Mike, always a pleasure chatting with you, my friend. It's been many years talking with you. So appreciate both y'all very, very much. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up there. Make sure you follow both of them on social media and their written and podcast as well, content. But for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 797. Catch y'all next time.